Coming up on August 7th, the Chicago culinary world will come together for the annual Lemon Chicago event at the Revel Space on Fulton. It's an event showcasing some of the best chefs and food from all around the country, with all the proceeds going to fight childhood cancer. The event has been going on since 2014, and it's raised over $700,000. The event will feature chefs like Sarah Grunberg from Monteverde, Jason Hamill from Lula Cafe, Stephanie Eiser from Girl and the Goat, and so, so many more. And like I said, not just from Chicago, but from all around the country. The hosts of the event are Chef Tony Montuano from Spiaggia and two of my next guests from One Off Hospitality, Donnie Medea and Chef Paul Kahn. Both are behind some of the Chicago's greatest restaurants, from Publican to Avec to Big Star, Nico Osteria, Blackbird, the latest Publican anchor. I mean, the list is so damn impressive. It really is.
So damn impressive.
So damn impressive. The James Beard Award. The James Beard Award-winning chef and restaurateur of One Off Hospitality are my guests tonight at the big table. Paul Kahn, Donnie Medea. Welcome to The Download. Good to see you guys.
Great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
So let's talk about Lemon Chicago, because this is something that's been going on since 2014, and it's an event that brings the chefs together in a tasting room. And Revel, we had the guys from Revel on not too long ago in our business segment. Talk about where this comes from, the idea of giving back to cancer research.
Yeah, I just want to mention one thing. $700,000 only in Chicago in the past 3 years, but $15 million in the peripheral, meaning that this event was created back in Philly back in 2001, 2002, I think, when Mark Vetri took it upon himself with his business partners to create this incredible Liz and Jay Scott, the mother and father of Alex, which this charity is named after, they joined forces together. Their first year, they did it outside of Osteria on Broad Street in 2001 or 2002. Paul attended. I came the following year. They did $150,000 in the last 3 years. They clocked in $1 million at the Urban Outfitters
headquarters,
which is the old Navy Yards in Philly.
So it's amazing. I mean, this is a nationwide event that continues to bring in money for, I mean, what I call a generic, I mean, when I say childhood cancer, that's a generic term for really for research and development for all sorts of cancers and things that affect children.
Yeah, you know, what Donnie said about the event starting in Philly is true, and they started, I think they invite 50 chefs from all over the country and all over the world, a bunch of guys coming from Italy, friends of Mark, and it's an amazing event, and it was so inspirational to a lot of the chefs that attended it that they took it upon themselves to do it in their own city. So Suzanne Goen does it, from Luke does it in L.A., Jonathan Waxman did it for a while in New York, and on and on and on. So it's an incredible cause. I think the real key thing here is, there's a lot of great charities out there. A lot of money is raised, and a lot of them are real top heavy. Alex's Lemonade Stand is an incredible charity because so much of the money goes directly to research and directly affects children's lives. It saves a lot of kids, which I think is a pretty incredible thing.
Well, why do you guys get involved? I mean, in Chicago, you've donated your talents to Philly. You talked about it right at the beginning, Donnie. I mean, what is it about starting and doing your own event in Chicago?
Yeah, I think you get behind the movement. You know, what you see, what Mark does and his business partner, Jeff Michaud and Jeff Benjamin, they're in it to win it, and they really feel the movement. So like Jonathan Waxman and Nancy Silverton in L.A. and Susan Goyne, we felt the movement. And instead of just going there once a year and participating for this one-day event, we felt compelled that the charity was so near and dear to our hearts after the last 10, 12 years of being involved with it that we wanted to bring it to Chicago and we wanted to participate. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll say that when we...
I'm fast, by the way.
When we were opening Blackbird almost 20 years ago, 21 years ago, because we had no idea what we were doing. We were just kind of doing it with our own hands and scurrying around and trying to figure out how to pay for everything. One of the things that we really... one of the early discussions we had was... How are we going to be different? How are we going to give back to the community? And, you know, those are the guiding principles of our restaurant group, One Off Hospitality. We it's not good enough to run a great restaurant and make people happy. I mean, that's crucial. That's important. Yeah. Hospitality is amazing. But, you know, the restaurant business uses so many resources, uses more energy than just about anything. It creates more garbage than just about anything. And we said from the very beginning that we want to treat our employees, our farmers, everyone that's involved in our business with a great deal of dignity and respect. And I think that that lesson has taken us really far. And we you know, we've never missed a payment on any bills. We're very proud of the level of dignity that we conduct ourselves mm-hmm. with. And so when we saw this charity and this event and how amazing it was, like Donnie said, we got swept into the movement, and they're amazing people. The story is amazing. Yeah. And it's an incredible cause.
Putting on an event like this, I mean, to have chefs from all 30 plus chefs coming in from all over the country to do it in a space like this, to do it in tasting style where people come through, it's a lot of work. It's one thing to say that one-off hospitality wants to give back and give mm-hmm. to charity. But to do it this way, in which you are putting together an event on top of the restaurants I mentioned, which was half the fleet, I mean, where do you guys find the time for this? I mean, the idea of putting this together.
We don't. I'm gonna say one word. Heather Medina.
Heather Medina, our assistant, is the last 2 weeks with, of course, Rachel to our right. The thread of emails and orchestration and execution. She
takes it all on.
She takes it all on. Flights, arrangements, cars. Where the food will be brought.
She's filling
who's
gift bags
prep.
Right now.
flowers. It's true. Every little detail. And to be honest with you, if it wasn't for Heather, there's absolutely no way that either Paul and I could pull this off. And we're also, you know, we also have our great team. Our business partners are going to pull in, and they're going to help out, and they're going to load ice, and they're going to polish glassware, and they're going to do whatever it takes. But it takes an army. It really does.
It really does, right?
And where do we find the time? Well, Justin, we have no time. There is no
you
time.
Don't need it anymore,
I just
right?
I just had a 45-minute break with my wife. She's sitting waiting for me at Nico. I brought you a little pasta, so hopefully you'll enjoy it, and
nice.
and I'll
job,
go back
buddy.
There and
she's waiting. I hope you told her that you were coming to do the interview. You're like, I'll be right back.
I'll
I just
right
need to check
back.
Something in the kitchen. You go out the back door into a cab, come over.
What pasta did you bring?
Rigatoni, because I want to make sure
it'll hold up well.
Good.
It'll
thank
hold
you.
Up well, and there's a nice piece of focaccia in there as well.
Thank you. For an event like this, both of you guys have been involved in a lot of different tasting events. And when we talk tasting events, it's 30 different stations in mm-hmm. which people, they pay one ticket and they come through and they can sample a different.
Yeah.
But there's a lot that goes into that because, you know, there you guys both have been at whether it be James Beard receptions or Chicago Gourmet or other
tons.
Places. I mean, what I hear over and over is, I mean, the infrastructure and the design of those things have to be on point. You know, I talked to so many different chefs who have said, I'm glad that I got involved with this, but when I get here, I mean, it is tough. It's tough work to have the stuff come out, and there's not a lot of time for chit-chat and schmoozing and all that kind of stuff. For you guys, from being a part of that and understanding it, do you put input into how this should be the right kind of event,
you know,
a more one-off hospitality kind of event?
We certainly do, but one thing I'll mention, you know, the group of chefs from Chicago and from all around the country are total pros. You know, Donald Link from New Orleans, one of the greatest chefs in New Orleans. Michael Shamrusky, I think he's the greatest seafood chef in America. That's just my humble opinion. These guys do a ton of events, and they come ready to roll. They come with, you know, boxes the size of a coffin, full of food, most of it prepped. If they need anything, they reach out to us. We get that for them. And so they come in, and there's very little for them to do. Almost all the prep is done in the comfort of their own kitchens.
Mm-hmm.
And same with the Chicago guys, the Chicago men and women. They bring it. They're ready to go. You know, we provide everything that they ask for, and we go. You know, an interesting thing is the last 2 years we did this event, it was actually at the Modern Wing of the Art Institute, and it was a different format.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Each chef did a four-course meal for a table of 10 people. And then
wow.
we had a dessert buffet from a lot of great pastry chefs after that. And we changed this because we wanted it to be a little more fun, a little more laid back. And I think for us, the real focus is on some amazing auction items
yeah.
that we're going to offer. That's
yeah.
really where the bread and butter comes from and where the charity raises the money.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a lot of time and effort into those auction items, not getting off the course of how difficult it is to pull this off, but we have an incredible team that's been on there.
I was going to say, I mean, that there is something to be said about this format, the format you're shifting to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a format that now is seems to be the go-to for a lot of different charities where chefs will come in for they'll set up their stations and the people pay one ticket to come in and
yeah.
sample the food. I mean, that seems
great.
To be really you're seeing more and more of those kind of pop up to get a sample of some of the great celebrity chefs that are in the city and beyond.
Yeah, that dine around. The first time I saw that was with Paul early on at Alex's in Philly, and they do it so well, and Susan adopted that as well. And it's just like Paul said, the word fun is a major component, because you don't have one chef cooking specifically for 10 or 12 people. You have 30 chefs cooking for everyone. So if you want to eat 30 bites, or if you want to eat 10 bites, your 10 favorite bites. And then again, I use this movement. The movement goes around like, who's the best? Well, Jeremy, Charles, his dish is incredible. And then it'll get around, well, so-and-so's dish is incredible. And people will come to the chefs and goes, listen, I've been in every station. Your dish is the best. And usually it's Paul's.
And thanks, Donnie. And you know, Donnie mentioned Jeremy Charles. He is from St. John's, Newfoundland. There was just an amazing article in the New York Times last weekend about him and the great chefs in St. John's. I went out there and cooked with Jeremy a few years ago. You are on the – it's a three-hour or three-and-a-half-hour flight from St. John's, Newfoundland to London. It's in North America, which is crazy. It's a really beautiful place, but most of all, he's an amazing chef. He just gets some incredible ingredients from farmers, fishermen, hunters, things like that out there. So there's a real impressive group of
chefs.
It's
amazing to look at the list of people that will be at the event. Lemon Chicago, which will be on August 7th at the Revel Fulton Market space. We just had the Revel people in. That's the space at Fulton and Racine. Chef Paul Kahn, Donnie Medea in studio tonight, the guys behind One Off Hospitality. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, my guest at the Big Table tonight, the guys behind One Off Hospitality, the restaurant group that brings us Publican Anchor, Avec, Blackbird. I don't know why I named these. I don't know why I named any of these. It's ridiculous how much. I mean, you guys, Donnie Medea, Chef Paul Kahn in studio tonight. We're talking about the event Lemon Chicago, which will be on August 7th at Revel Fulton Market. It's a tasting. What do you call it? A tasting forum or what?
Dine around.
Feeding frenzy with some of the biggest chefs, not only here in Chicago but all around the country, around the world. It'll be at Revel, and it'll be. All proceeds going to fight childhood cancer. You know, for you guys, I mean, I kind of joke about, you know, the empire that you've made, like the idea that I name these restaurants and I just stop in the middle of it. But it is really impressive. You talked about opening Blackbird together 21 years ago. Take us back to Blackbird. Mm-hmm. You know, for you guys to get into the Chicago restaurant business with a fine dining restaurant establishment, where were you guys at? Talk about that experience, about bringing Blackbird to Chicago.
Where were we at? I was bartending. Our other business partner, Ricky, he was bartending. Our other business partner, Edward, was waiting tables, and Paul was cooking at Irwin's. And I think we all knew it about one another, and we came together to do something different and special in an area that wasn't developed yet. We had a great architect, even though we didn't know what the place would look like at the end of the architectural format, but it was, the process was fun because we had time. We don't have time now, but we had time.
It was the good old days.
We had time to sweep. We had time to get in our car and drive to find items that we needed to get deals on in order to do the right finishes. That
yank
the,
stuff out of old hotels. Yeah, we did whatever was necessary.
Yank, exactly.
We were animals.
I don't know about the animals, but we were very ambitious. Not that we're not ambitious now, but we were ambitious in different ways because we knew that it was do or die. We sunk every dime or penny that our families or aunt or uncle or friend would give us, and we were able to pull this off at the 11th hour. It took us 15 months to build it. We did everything that we could with our hands to build this restaurant, and it was fun. There was a lot of camaraderie. There was a lot of stress. There was a lot of think tanks. How are we going to get through this week? We need payroll. Our general contractor at the time, he went missing a few times. We had to fire him.
He was living in the space. It was a real grassroots.
Well, I mean, that's 1996 we're talking about? 1995, yeah. 1996?
We signed the lease in 96. We started building in September. We signed the lease in September of 96. We finished in December. We opened December of 97, so it took us 15 months.
Took you 15 months. So this is really the 20th anniversary this year.
Yeah,
I'm fascinated in what Chicago's culinary scene was like then. I mean, I remember it, but I mean, it was a dominated Let Us Entertain You kind of.
Yeah, I was gonna go there. There was very few independents. I think the most notable, of course, is Rick Bayless. Frontera Grill was open. They just celebrated their 30th anniversary, and Rick's a mentor. I spent a number of years working at Frontera in Topolo Bampo. But beyond that, there was Gordon Sinclair. There wasn't really much beyond that, and there was really nothing that was. I mean, Frontera was not fine dining. It was raucous, crazy. It was before you opened Topolo Bampo. And we wanted to do a place that had a lot of energy, but sort of brought in all the elements of fine dining. You know, I had gone to France and dined around, and I was just, obsessed with all the fun things that you get in a meal like that without the stuffiness. And, you know, the space, because of Donnie's relationship with Thomas Schlesser, the architect, who's a brilliant guy, the space was built, and we're like, holy cow, what did we get ourselves into? And the space really created bigger britches to fill. You know, it's very sleek. I think it's timeless. I mean, there's so much.
No, it still stands. I mean, it's still the same building.
People come in and they say, this space is so fresh. It's so incredible. And you say, well, it's been here 20 years. And they've like, how many times have you remodeled? Mm-hmm. And we say, none.
That's amazing.
And that in and of itself is amazing. And
it's also amazing because, you know, you were one of the first restaurants in Chicago to open up in that West Loop area. I mean, you're right there on the other side of the expressway. But the idea of combining fine dining experience with design,
mm-hmm.
And also doing something, as you mentioned, in an entrepreneurial spirit. There weren't a lot in front of you guys. I mean, there were chains and other things that were happening and a lot of groups that were putting things together. But the idea, it didn't seem at the time that there was a true independent spirit in the culinary scene here in Chicago. Did you recognize it at that time? Were you like, we're doing something. We kind of want to be trailblazers. We're gonna do this our way.
I think we were trailblazers. I mean, we knew we had to because we couldn't afford the rent on the west side of Halsted, where Jerry Kleiner was, and Vivo was there, and then Marché opened in 93, and then he opened a place called Red Light. So he was like the king of Restaurant Row, the original Restaurant Row. And we looked at all those spaces, but we didn't feel comfortable spending the amount of money on that side. So we went on the other side, and you know, everybody laughed at us like, are you out of your mind? You're on a one-way street? What, are you crazy? You got to be with everyone else. And lo and behold, when you think about it, when people thought we were crazy, we did trailblaze because that one-way street was an avenue for people exiting the city going back home.
Going to the expressway, right?
Tens of thousands of cars would drive by and look at that fishbowl and go, what is that place? I want to go in there. And they didn't make it to the west side because on the other side of Halsted, because they got on either going north or south and went home. So we had an opportunity to all these people that became voyeurs to this little restaurant, and they came and checked us out. And you know, it was luck? Was it trailblazing? Were we idiots?
All three
of those.
Was the original plan with the business partners and you guys to open multiple restaurants? Or was it just we're going to do Blackbird?
You know, we just one at a time. I don't think we even had a plan. I don't think we knew what the hell we were doing. We were just had a lot of grit and a lot of drive. And I think we really wanted to be successful. For me, you know, the way that I was taught to cook wasn't really out there, you know, and finding incredible products and a real passion for farmers. You know, now everything is local and everything is, you know, everyone shops the farmer's market. You know, everyone talked that talk back then, but no one did it. There was a couple guys that went to the farmer's market and we would always see each other there. And for me, from the very beginning, you know, we had farmers come in our back door. You know, again, from my mentors, from Erwin Dreschler and from Rick Bayless, they were guys that were doing that long before. And, you know, my obsession with Alice Waters and Chez Panisse was kind of what built the food of that restaurant. And I think when we saw that restaurant got to be fancy, you know, or a little fancier than I had planned.
And clean,
you know. And so the design really influenced the food.
And that's important.
We didn't know what the heck we were doing.
Paul Kahn, Donnie Medea in studio tonight. We're talking about the, of course, one-off hospitality, but also the event coming up on August 7th, which will be at the Revel Space on Fulton here in Chicago, an event that will bring in celebrity chefs from all around the country, around the world, to an event that goes, it's an annual event. All the proceeds go to fight childhood cancer. All right, we'll do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get the news, and we'll continue our conversation after the news with Donnie and Chef Paul Kahn in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight at the big table. Chef Paul Kahn, restaurateur Donnie Medea, the guys behind One Off Hospitality, the great restaurant group here in Chicago, the Deans. As I say, the Dean, that's, you guys have turned into the Deans of the restaurant scene here in Chicago. They're also hosting a tremendous event on August 7th at the Revel Space on Fulton Racine, called Lemon Chicago, that brings in 30 plus chefs from around the country, around the world, to bring their talents for childhood cancer. This is something they've been doing for a couple of years. A big event. Tickets are available, so check it out. You know, as I gave you guys in studio, it's interesting because I've had a lot of chefs that come through. We do a segment called Industry Night where we continue to talk about the food and hospitality industry here in Chicago, and it is. It's night and day. Since the last time we talked, Donnie, I mean, mm-hmm. we talked 2 years ago.
Yep.
And I mean, even in 2 years' time, this area around Michigan Avenue, other neighborhoods, I mean, more and more restaurants are coming to Chicago, more and more restaurant groups that aren't from Chicago are setting up shop here. You know, why do you see the growth of this scene? I mean, we were talking right before the news about 20 years ago, Blackbird, 1996. We fast forward to now, 2017. I mean, how do you see, where do you see? I mean, are we truly the mecca in this country when it comes to food?
Yeah, I think that there, I mean, Paul can comment more about his colleagues in the industry. I equate your question to a shift in independence in itself. Like Breakout, 1997, like you said earlier, there wasn't that much going on. So we were compelled to do our own thing, whether it was the ability to not conform to authority, or if we wanted to not work for a big restaurant group. But let's not forget Trotter's 1996. He's a breakout guy in himself. What he did was groundbreaking. Melman, I mean, speak of him. I heard him speak this year at the Welcome Conference, 1972. I think his number is 246 restaurants.
He owns, so, wow, that's amazing.
So, from 72 until now, I'm sorry, 46 years, something like 100 restaurants. That's more
math is not a lot. Download doesn't do math.
Yeah. So anyway, I think what I was going to mention is the shift of independence. It's not what you know, it's what someone sees. Or if they're in and they work with us, and they see us opening restaurant after restaurant, or they see the Boca guys opening restaurant after restaurant, or they see Melman opening restaurant after restaurant. Now his sons are opening restaurants. Mm-hmm. So I think the shift is the movement itself. And the movement means I can do that. I can get a chef. I can sign a lease. I can do my own deal. I can find funding. But, you know, the complexities of a restaurant is, you know, I consider myself really lucky. We're two of seven. So I have two of seven partners. And I feel very lucky that somebody's constantly watching my back. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching someone else's back. So the reason why we can open more restaurants is, well, we have the knowledge. We've had the knowledge of 20 years, but we didn't know, like Paul used an important word in the last segment, we didn't know anything about anything back then. But now when somebody's in your own fold, they feel they write things down. They take knowledge. They look at things. They ask questions. and it's a different atmosphere these days. It's I can do that.
Is it? I mean, I guess I asked this question probably knowing the answer, and I'll ask you this, Paul. But I mean, is it an easier business to get into? You know, the idea that there's more opportunity than, say, in 1996? Because the old adage used to be, you know, most restaurants aren't going to last 5 years. You have a successful restaurant if you make it to five.
You know, I think it's not easier to get into financially. I think it's a heck of a lot more difficult to get into financially. But I think it's easier because the market is just growing like crazy. And the amount of attention that chefs and restaurants get is growing like crazy. So, you know, we'll see is the answer to your question. I mean, so many places are opening. You know, longevity for us is an indicator. You know, all of our places, you know, knock on wood, they're all open. And, you know, 20 years, 12 years for a VAC.
14 years
for a VAC. And on and on and on. And so for us, it's about great food. It's about great design. Mostly it's about great hospitality. I think that's the thing. But to answer your question, is it easier? It must be. Right. I'm not exactly sure why.
Maybe the demand. Maybe because the world changed in the way that people want fine dining, or they want that experience, or just more customer base.
We're so much about providing services. Yeah. You know, it's tattoo parlors, nail shops, and restaurants. Yeah. That's all we got. Everything else you can get and do on the internet.
and pretty soon, restaurants on the internet, too. Yeah. All right, so... You know, it's interesting because there's two things I want to get into, which is just what that expansion, that growth of a culinary scene means for individual restaurants. I mean, obviously there's demand. Like you said, all your restaurants are still open. But we had, we had Catherine Diorio on talking from Check Please, and she said the theme from this year's season was service is bad. Mm-hmm. We've had others on who said, you know, there's a cook shortage. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that there starts to be a little bit of a strain on good talent that can be used in restaurants that are selling good hospitality.
Sure.
And you guys do. I mean, Donnie, when you were in there, I remember that conversation. You talked a lot about service mm-hmm. being number one. How do you maintain that quality when the growth of an industry, especially here in Chicago, just is so exponential? It's so accelerated.
Obsessive compulsive behavior. you know, it's knowing who's in your restaurants and how you can get to the guest and make sure that the guest, every guest is having an incredible experience. And if they're not, how do you cure the bad dining experience? I can't tell you that, not every one of our restaurants, maybe once in a while someone will have an off experience. So how do you cure that? And that's with, you know, this just being humble and calling the person or inviting them back in or sending, you know,
whatever it takes,
sending something from PQM, a basket of goodies from PQM's PQM. The importance has to be it has to be high level and taking care of guests. Again, I consider myself very lucky to have a business partner like Paul Kahn and what he does in the kitchen and how he mentors his cooks and sous chefs and chefs about product and availability, but also about the participation. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, go.
You're
rolling, dude. You're rolling.
No, but I think the level of importance is that if I consider myself lucky, what can I do in the front of the house to make the guest experience the ultimate, the best.
Like match the food that's coming out, right?
Yeah, because you're going to win an award for a great chef, but we're not in it to win awards. What we're here to do is create an experience, full level, hospitality, service, and food, and just make people feel the best when they come into our restaurants. And I think the important part of that is teaching.
Yeah, and I'm gonna key off. Sorry to interrupt you, Donnie, but I'm gonna key off on a word that Donnie mentioned: humility. I think that's such a crucial perspective for chefs, for restaurateurs, for young cooks, for everyone involved in the business. And I don't know, you know, back in the day, it was like you don't like that food. It's the way I wanted to cook it. You get out of my restaurant.
Right.
Now it's like, you know, please tell me if you liked it. If you didn't, I'll make it differently. We'll do whatever we can to make sure you have a great experience. And I think That's something that from the dishwasher to the host and everyone in between at our restaurants, we feel is incredibly important. And, you know, for me, man, I could promote a lot harder and I could do a lot of things that I choose not to because, you know, we found a niche, you know, that we really enjoy. I like to mentor young chefs and we have a ton of them in our company. And I think that is that's how we fight the war against the you know, the lack of cooks and the lack of chefs.
Well,
we provide great opportunities.
Exactly. I mean, as you talked about your experience with Chef Bayless and others as well, you worked Irwin and talk about what it takes. I mean, we talk about this cook shortage.
Sure.
I mean, is that a thing? It's a real thing.
Big time.
But I mean, for one-off hospitality, I would think you'd be a destination where you guys might be part of the reason why there's a cook shortage because people want to come work with you and they don't want to work in other places.
You know, there's us and there's the Boca Group and there's Rich Melman has a lot of great restaurants and more. There's a lot of great restaurateurs and groups and restaurants in the city. And, you know, there's different groups of cooks with different ideas, you know. Used to be, yeah, man, everyone wanted to work for us. I think a lot of cooks still do. It's a great learning experience. It's a great growth experience. There's a great opportunity to end up somewhere. You know, if you want to come in and work hard, I could tell you the story of five different people that started as a cook and are now the chef of their own restaurant.
Or owners
mm-hmm. In our company. And so...
Is that part of the problem, though? Is that part of, I don't want to generalize generations and things like that, but is it part of the problem where you get cooks who are like, that's my goal?
Well, there's some short-sightedness. You know, like a young cook will... work in a restaurant and be like, wow, this is really hard and I'm only making 14 or 15 bucks an hour. I can go over there and make 18 or 19 and it's a dead end. They're, you know, 5 years from that point, they're not going to be in the business anymore. And so I think it's about long term. You know, my thing was I have some defect in my head that says just work hard, put your head down, learn, love what you do. And keep doing it. And I would rush back, you know, I'd rush home, look at cookbooks, rush back to the restaurant the next day to cook and try out something new that I had read about. And now it's more like young cooks want to be told exactly what to do and how you want to do it. And I'd be like, but I saw this and what about this idea? And so the generations are a little bit different. I mean, those young men and women that still push like I did are out there and they come along every once in a while and it's a breath
of
fresh air.
You know, I got to say, on Friday we had Leland Sklar. He's a longtime bass player, right? He was a sessions bass player. He's been on 2,500 plus albums.
Wow.
Phil Collins, James Taylor. But he's the guy you call when you need a bass player in studio, right? And we talked about the idea. Are you the kind of bass player that comes in and you'd say, tell me what to do? You know, and he's like, no. I never play the same song twice. I never play it the same way. I'm going to change it. I'm going to add things. I'm going to do things, which is not what you think of when it comes to session. And I find a little bit it's relatable with cooks in
Absolutely.
The way that you don't necessarily want them to do it the exact same way every time. You want them to bring passion and creativity and skill, but not necessarily like a factory.
You know, there was a huge movement. Food changed, you know, 5 or 8 or 10 years ago, and you know, a lot more precise cooking. And it's not a bad thing. You know, great chefs like Wiley Dufresne, you know, WD-50 in New York, and Grant Achatz, and I don't know where the root of it is. Maybe it was El Bulli in Spain, but this really precise cooking happened, and I think guys that have the background and the skills can do that, and they can do it right. There's a lot of people that don't, and you can be a poser, and you can grab those tweezers and put food on the plate and put things together and puree something, but the developed flavors and the soulfulness comes from studying Italian cuisine and studying French cuisine and really getting in there and really cooking. So to put a piece of fish in a bag, cook it in a water bath, take it out, you know, sear it, put it on a plate, it may be a great piece of fish, but something's missing. And I feel like that as a whole has sort of taken a lot away from food. And there's been a backlash, you know. It's interesting. Certain cities in America cook different ways. You know, like I feel like New York is very precise and very technical. And California is sort of the opposite, you know, based on all that incredible product that they have. And believe me, that's a generalization. There are a lot in each city that cook different ways. But I just look back and I'm like, man, there's a whole generation of cooks that come to an event like we're doing with a briefcase and open it up and serve their dish. You know, I got giant boxes and coolers and I'm sweating and working hard and actually cooking. Maybe I'm the dummy, but at the end of the day,
no, you're just different. I'll chime in and just mention third shift of the evening. There's also we're in a chef obsessed world because of TV. So what used to be 15 and 20 years ago, mm-hmm. used to be the retainership of a line cook would be 2 years. I want to study under Paul. I want to study under Grant. I want to study under Tony Montuano. Our study time is 8 months now. We're lucky to have a cook for 8 months. It went from, I'll say, 2 years to a year and a half. And then it went from a year and a half to a year. Now we'll have a line cook possibly 8 months to a year.
Yeah, but I'm going to say that looking at all of our restaurants, you know, the culture in each kitchen, and the culture is dictated by the chef de cuisine. Yeah, I mentor them. I push them in a certain way. I say, no, you can't talk to that person like that. That's not the way that we do things. But the kitchens that have really strong cultures, the cooks stay for a lot longer because they know that they can contribute. They know they can learn. They can dig in. Mm-hmm. And most of all, you know, for us, our credo is let's have fun.
Yeah.
In those kitchens, they have a lot of fun. We don't take things too seriously.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean, as we get close to wrapping up here, I think of musicians and I think of artists, and over time, chefs and restaurants have turned from businesses to almost arts and culture. Presentation is a big part of it. Creativity is a big part of it. How important is, or let me ask you this way. Is your job creative? Are you creative? Are you more in the arts, culture, culinary side of it than the business of running a restaurant?
Both. So equal, I think, for us. Yeah. I mean, you can't be creative if the business doesn't survive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for us, as our company grows, you know, the inception of an idea, going through the design process, mm-hmm. seeing the design process come to fruition, mm-hmm. you know, so many... things that happen during the design, you know, yeah, we hire a great architect, but we push them, prod them, we inspire them. That's a big part of what we do. So it's super creative. I mean, every day I feel that we're blessed because we have the opportunity to be creative. And I think creative solutions to business, different ways to do things, different
problems,
ways to look
right,
at things
right.
is also very important. But at the end of the day, we got nothing if we're out of business. So
yeah, right.
It's done.
Real estate deal, first and foremost. Lucky to have Paul's business partner in his creativity and in the kitchen and mentorship. But I equate a lot of the success to the real estate deal and making sure that we could afford to stay open in the leanest times and hunker down in January, February, March, where, you know, we're not in California. We're not in San Francisco. We're in the middle of the Midwest where it gets cold and it snows and people don't come out in January and February. So what do we do? You got to have a great real estate deal to stay open, knock on wood, and good partnerships.
It's a yin and yang. I love it. You guys, this is great. You know, are you guys fulfilled? I mean, as business partners and you guys have had your story's been told. In the way that you've done a lot of interviews, a lot of great features. I mean, looking up your work today, I mean, it's a plethora of different stories. But as you get to this point where you're coming up on the 20th anniversary of Blackbird.
Yeah, we're excited too.
I mean,
are you,
is this a fulfilling life? I mean, are you at the point where you look back on 20 years and say, I am satisfied. I am satiated. If you
I mean,
will.
The way that the
I don't
fulfillment,
know if I'm satisfied, but...
the way he's never satisfied, the way the fulfillment happens is different. And you morph along with that. I mean, I'll just mention that we're working on a project with a new partnership that we created. We're One Off Hospitality and two wonderful chefs, Erling Wubauer, Cosmo Goss, yeah. and our great operations guy, Josh Tilden, along with our other partner, Terry Alexander. We've combined One Off Hospitality with Underscore Hospitality. We'll be opening up hopefully late this year.
Yeah. Highly anticipated.
Pacific Standard Time.
Yeah.
And it's teaching those young men the creative process that we've gone through so many times, but they're teaching us so much in the process. You know, they have a different perspective on everything. And so, you know, you may scratch your head and then go, wow, that's a great idea. People are going to be, maybe cooks will stay longer. Maybe mm-hmm. guests will be more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can be kinder to the planet, you know, all those things. And so
for me, that's been very fulfilling. And I see that as hopefully as the destiny of our company, continuing to empower young men and women, continuing to mentor them, continuing to grow and continuing to push mm-hmm. our industry forward to be, you know, more sustainable, kinder and gentler to people, you know, all those things, you know, yeah.
Donnie, what do you got?
Yeah. Fulfillment. It's a tough question. It's a tough question to answer. Satisfied. Terry Alexander clipped out he took a clipping.
He's our business partner.
He's our business partner. And an incredible, businessman in his own right. He gave us all a clipping, one time of a Bobby Knight quote.
He loves to clip.
Satisfaction is the first sign of failure. So am I satisfied? I don't know. I don't know what I don't know what satisfied means for me personally. I know that I got to keep pushing. I got to keep the drive going.
Bobby Knight, the guy that threw all the chairs and stuff?
Yeah, one chair. He threw one chair.
He's also got a lot of great quotes.
Anyway, I think I'm satisfied in the way that we can mentor our staff and let them grow, and hopefully they'll grow with us and stay with us. But I will say, Chandra, a young lady that used to work for us, who's the editor of Plate Magazine, wrote a beautiful article about Blackbird when we turned 15 years old. And if you were to look at the lineage, would make me satisfied and make me satisfied in knowing that what we put together gave other chefs and cooks opportunities
and
to grow.
And restaurateurs. Guys.
Yeah, to grow mm-hmm. on their own. So that's satisfying to me. It really is.
Donnie Medea and Chef Paul Kahn in studio. They are the two of the partners in One Off Hospitality, and they are the hosts of the event coming up here on August 7th, Lemon Chicago. It's a plate, food around.
in memory of Alex herself, who created the lemonade stand to raise money for her own cancer research. That's the story behind it.
She raised money because she didn't want children to go what she went through.
Yeah.
So that's coming up August 7th, yep. Lemon Chicago, and it'll be 30-plus celebrity chefs incredible from all around the world, auction items as well. So much to of course, and you can find that stuff online. Lemon Chicago, August 7th at the Revel Fulton Market, a must-attend event for Chicago foodies. Donnie Medea, Paul Kahn, appreciate you guys coming in. Great to see you again, and thanks for being my guest at the Big Table. Appreciate
it. Thank you for having us tonight. Thank you.